sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check your instruction manual or call the business office for assistance.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Out in Signal Land, we have Alex.
You do. Good evening from London.
You're on the left side of the room this time. Okay. And also we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Gila.
Good evening.
And I laugh when I say Signal Land because, boy, Signal Land is in the news this week, is it not? this story pretty much exploded a couple of days ago. Funny thing. Signal, it's an easy app to use, but it's also, it's fairly trivial to make big mistakes. But you can do that with anything. You can do that with, a computer program. You can do that with a nuclear arsenal. Do that with just about any tool that's out there and make it do something you don't want it to do. That's why, people should only be in charge of the things they can handle, So what are we talking about? Okay, for those of you in the future listening to this show, wondering just what we're talking about this week, this country, the United States of America, bombed Yemen as part of something that we just do every now and then. And in the process of doing that, the conversation by the various people that are involved in decisions like this, defense secretary and national security advisors, people like that, they had a conversation about this. And this conversation took place over Signal. Now we'll discuss, if Signal is a good idea to have a conversation like that, but what also happened, and it's hard to even be saying this with a straight face, and I'm not doing a good job of doing that. A journalist from The Atlantic, the esteemed magazine The Atlantic, was included in this conversation. Why? Well, that's the thing. No one seems to know why. I saw the article that was actually in The Atlantic, was published online, that basically said, I was included in the conversation about bombing Yemen. I thought it was fake until the bombs started dropping. And that's pretty much what happened. That's pretty much what happened. The editor-in-chief, Jeffrey Goldberg, of The Atlantic, was included in this conversation which as of today has been published online with, I believe, one redaction, a redaction of a CIA representative because they don't like having their names mentioned. So that's been redacted, but pretty much everything else is now out there. It is a screw-up of a phenomenal proportion. The security implications, we won't even get to scratch the surface during this hour. It's embarrassing. It's really something that you'd expect an amateur organization to... I guess that's we got exactly what we voted for, didn't we? I've seen better security with high school kids, you know, doing group chats and knowing who's on the chat with you. You know, it's common sense. And these guys, they all missed it. Every single one. And, you know, if they missed that, who knows what else they missed? You know, who else was on that conversation? Who was on other conversations? Who will be on future conversations? What apps are they going to be using in the future for the most sensitive of information? Now, none of this has anything to do with, you know, whether or not we think it was right or wrong to do this bombing campaign. That's a whole other discussion. But this kind of a thing, you know, when you're running a country, you should have some degree of security. You should understand how it works. They do not. That has become so clear, if it wasn't already screamingly obvious. Let's start by talking about the wisdom of using Signal for something like this. Now, I should point out, in fact, Alex, you and I had this conversation about 6 months ago, or maybe more like 8 months ago, on these very airwaves. We were talking about a Telegram. And I recall you telling me that a group chat on Telegram is not encrypted because it's a lot more complex to encrypt all these different people as opposed to just, you know, a one-to-one conversation. Signal, however, it turns out, by default, does encrypt group chats. So they have that going for them, at least. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, I think so. But you have to remember, though, that end-to-end encryption in a group chat like that is really about protecting data in transit. The endpoint, that is the device itself on which the data resides, always decrypts the data and makes it human readable. So that means if you have access to the endpoint device, you have access to all of the Signal chat data. So let's pull on this a little bit. So if the phones, let's say, if any of the phones at issue here for any of the people that were part of this conversation, if those phones fell into the possession of someone who wasn't authorized to have them, you know, or more importantly, if those devices themselves were compromised, then those Signal chats would also be compromised. Now, I could go even further from this because it's really not clear at all from what I've read in the public reporting on this, where we have no idea about the specific devices at issue here. Were they running iOS or Android? Was the OS of the devices at issue fully updated and patched? Did they have any compromised or questionable apps on them? Were there any other signs that the phones themselves were exploited perhaps by a foreign adversary? And I really believe that without a full forensic investigation of all of the devices used, that's going to be entirely unclear. Now, separately as well, I think we should all know by now, and I think this is really important. I haven't heard anybody talking about this, but we should all know by now that Signal does not just run on a mobile device, right? So there's a desktop client that can sync with chats that come in on a mobile device. So why aren't there questions being asked about that? Did any of the parties to the communications, including Jeffrey Goldberg, the reporter, the editor-in-chief from The Atlantic, did anybody have Signal linked to a desktop client here? If that's so, then that's a completely new vector of potential compromise of this classified information. And yes, I'm calling it classified information because I think it was classified. And computers themselves, so if you have this desktop client linked to a computer, computers themselves, whether it's a laptop or a desktop running Mac OS or Windows or Linux, it doesn't really matter. They are far more vulnerable and exploitable than mobile.
I'm sorry, you froze Alex. They're far more exploitable than
Yeah, my connection isn't great here. Are far more vulnerable and exploitable than a mobile device.
See, I didn't know that. You're saying a mobile device, i.e. a phone, is more secure to have this kind of a conversation on than, say, a laptop or a desktop.
Yes, absolutely.
And why,
no doubt.
Why is that?
Well, because the operating systems at issue, when you're running Windows, you're running Mac OS, Windows in particular, has just got so many vulnerabilities inherent to it, right? There are so many vectors that can be attacked on a Windows machine or a Mac OS machine. There are so many exploits out there available. So it's just, there's so many more vulnerabilities, so many more vectors of attack. And so they're far more vulnerable. Phones are, especially iOS devices, right? And this comes at a cost. An iOS device, you don't have as much power over it unless you jailbreak an iOS device, right? But that creates its own vulnerabilities there. So Android devices, which you have more control over the OS itself, are also known to be, you know, less hardened in many ways than iOS.
Now, are we able to tell, let alone if they were linked to another device, which device they were on by default? Are we assuming they all were using their phones? Because to me, it seems that if you're in the process of doing something like bombing a country, you're sitting in an office somewhere. You know, you're looking at a screen. You're doing something that implies, you know, a permanent setting, as opposed to, you know, walking down the street, tapping on your phone, not looking at the traffic. You know, it just seems like that's a very casual way of communicating. I know what you're saying is that's actually more secure, at least in some regards. But do we know, was anybody actually at a computer?
I don't think we do know that. I think it's quite possible that somebody could have been using a desktop client and not on their phone. It's entirely unknowable from just looking at the text itself as to whether the chat message that is being sent originated from a mobile device or from a desktop device.
I'm not sure if this is entirely correct, but I believe one of the principals involved in this, perhaps Mr. Waltz himself, stated in the hearing today that this software had been installed on a desktop machine at the beginning of his term as a means of communication. But it may not have been him, but it was one of the people that testified, well, I think, mentioned that today.
Kyle, if you're going to introduce characters, you have to tell us who they are. You said Mr. Waltz. Who is this?
I believe he's the National Security Advisor.
It doesn't really matter his job position, but basically he's the guy that screwed up. That's all you have to say.
Isn't he the one that added the journalist?
He, for some reason, and I want to look into this as well, he, for some reason, added Jeffrey Goldberg into the chat. Now, okay, we must have some kind of a theory as to how that happened, because based on the comments, and we'll get into that in a little bit, that these folks had about this particular journalist, it didn't seem like he was really tight with them. So why in God's name was he added to this Signal chat? Any theories? Go ahead, Gila.
Did read a theory that because so many people who were in this chat are going by their initials, that he initially intended, or someone in the chat intended, to add someone whose initials were JG, who I believe was another member of the security community, and just added the wrong JG.
Is it that easy in Signal to add the wrong person? Because, you know, what if God forbid there are two Jeffrey Goldbergs? You know, it's really easy to mix one up for the other. It has to be more of a confirmation process than just autofill the name. Go ahead, Rob.
It certainly can be. Signal, like on lots of messaging apps, you can choose a username and that can be whatever you like, but it can also go by whatever you have that individual stored as in your phone's local contacts. So if somebody had in their contacts been scrolling up and down and just clicked on the wrong JG, you know, how many of us have clicked on the wrong contact before or after the person we wanted to contact? It could be as stupid as that, which is very interesting when you think about this being used by people in charge of all this stuff.
So, like, what you're saying is, if, say, in my Signal contact, I'm not going to say who, but for one of you, it says do not answer. If I were to start typing D-O, it would fill that in, even though you're also accessible by, and again, I'm not going to say who it was. It sounds like there are multiple vectors, to coin an Alex phrase, to compromise this particular form of communication. Kyle?
Well, I would also note that from the tenor of the article, it seems as though they had not been using complete names in their profiles to begin with. Like, you know, the icon, if you don't have a picture for it, it'll put just the first initials.
First initial, yes.
But the way the author of the article, Jeffrey Goldberg, stated, he was describing them and then, like, kind of, well, in the annotated article as well, they're basically theorizing which initial. So I'm wondering if this is perhaps an ironic effect of them trying to obfuscate their full names in profiles, like instead of entering in this Signal contact as they set it up, instead of entering their full name, they just put their initials. So it made it harder to actually discern. You just have like a contact list full of initials, because in the article, he's basically trying to theorize or is speculating which initial means which person. There aren't full names in the chat or insofar as he could discern in even being a member, right?
These guys' idea of security might be, instead of writing Pete Hegseth, to simply say PH and mask their identity in that way.
It kind of seems like that. Like that was a way of
that's
making
impenetrable,
it,
man. I wouldn't be able to figure that out.
Just being like really minimal, which itself, like, okay, that's clever, but lots of times, like in communications app, Unified and other communications apps like this, you're being social, you're added to the various groups or lists or other people's contacts. You want to be somewhat identifiable, especially if it's a service where people sort of can find you or it announces. And that's something we've talked about before, where Signal sort of announces to people if you're already a contact. So, yeah, I think it's a counterintuitive thing. Like, they may have been trying to be a little sneaky, but it ended up leading to a little bit of confusion.
Might I suggest, in the hacker community for many years, we have used handles. It's not necessarily our names. Could be, an animal's name. It could be a building's name. It could be anything you want. And that's how your friends know you, and other people might not, although usually they find out at some point.
If these were all handles, we wouldn't really be able to tell who is whom, except
we're not supposed to.
Only their discussion.
Only they are supposed to be able to tell that. We're not supposed to be able to tell that, but here it's all out there in the open. Go ahead, Alex.
This is a very good reason why there should be an investigation into how this happened. You need to have some kind of forensic accounting of what had happened on that particular phone. This could be as simple as the Jeffrey Goldberg's number was stored with a different name by accident. He might have met him at a cocktail party, took his number and accidentally stored it as somebody else, and then added that person that he intended to add, but actually added Jeffrey Goldberg. But how this happened is really a matter of, I think, national importance, because it's a matter of international embarrassment.
Hang on. Are you saying it's as easy as me going to a cocktail party in Washington, D.C., introducing myself as Donald Trump to a lot of people, and having them type that into their phone, and every time they let autocomplete finish, I'm going to get added to their call instead of somebody else?
I guess yes. That is probably.
And I thought of that in 1 second, so there must be a lot of other more sophisticated things.
Yeah, you just have to be invited to parties, which I know that doesn't happen.
No, that's always been the problem here.
Yeah.
They're too frumpy.
All right, so, we have the situation. Go ahead, Rob, you have something.
Yeah, just one thing I think we need to mention is the fact that, for those unfamiliar, these officials should not be using Signal for this, and that is directly down to a rule at the Department of Defense. There is a memo I'm looking at, which was published on the 6th of October, 2023, which goes into what these mobile apps are, referring to non-classified, unclassified systems, which can refer to any chat apps that aren't, government approved for classified material. And in accordance, I'm quoting here, in accordance with DOD instruction 5200.01, DOD personnel will not use unclassified systems, government issued or otherwise, for classified national security information. You're not supposed to put Signal on your government-issued phone. And you're not supposed to be using your personal non-government-issued phone to discuss this stuff. So this is the huge point about this, where they were not using government-issued tech to do this government business. And that does not leave them open to the accountability they should be. That does not leave them open to the security, levels that they should be. This is a huge screw up on massive proportions. This goes well beyond but her emails.
The thing is, this is not a screw up. This is something that has been planned for a while. They're using Signal as an end run around FOIA very specifically. Mm-hmm. And ProPublica published 14 hours of Project 2025 training videos that talk specifically about using this kind of protocols to make sure this doesn't. I apologize. I did not have 14 hours today to watch all the ProPublica videos about how to use Signal to avoid maintaining this kind of information. But this is all the stickers and all the warnings about Project 2025. None of this can be a surprise. I am surprised by the extent of how much people are brushing this off. That's part of what scares me.
Well, the people brushing it off are the people with something to hide. And it's pretty clear that they're getting increasingly desperate. But just to speak to what Rob said a moment ago, as far as using a Signal, I saw not 12 hours ago, somebody, I believe it was from the Department of Defense, being quoted saying, this is automatically installed on our devices. So what gives here? You're not supposed to use it, and yet it's automatically installed. So something doesn't add up there. Go ahead, Alex. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that would be weird if Signal was installed and on these devices. I don't really understand it. But again, that's just like why we need a greater accounting of what the hell was happening here. Why was Signal on these devices? I mean, it doesn't seem to me at all reasonable that Signal would be installed on devices by default for the specific purpose of conveying classified information here. I mean, and look, what we're talking about, let's be really clear here. We're talking about operational details of a forthcoming strike on a hostile foreign adversary. For the Trump administration, or anybody in any administration, to claim that that's not classified is totally insane. I mean, this is not exactly the type of stuff you'd see written on a bathroom wall, right? I mean, how could this not be classified is beyond me. In fact, I mean, the government, and remember, I had worked in the intelligence community and access to classified information for quite some time, and the government has always been overcautious when it comes to the classification of documents and information. In fact, it's come under scrutiny and criticism. There's been a tremendous amount of criticism for the government overclassifying documents. So the idea that this would not be classified is totally nuts. To me, this sounds a hell of a lot like information that should not have been discussed outside of something called a SCIF or a sensitive.
Alex, you keep freezing up, so please try to improve your signal.
Yeah, it's probably not going to improve. I'm gonna be a little wonky here today, but my point is that this is information that should not be discussed outside of a SCIF or a sensitive compartmented information facilities. In other words, this is a secure room or some kind of facility that is designed to protect classified information from unauthorized access, including things like electronic surveillance and data leakage. So this is highly, highly classified information in my view, and certainly not something that should have ever been addressed on anyone's personal mobile device, especially if those communications are connected with a desktop device in somebody's house in Fairfax, Virginia or something. It's totally nuts.
Well, to answer your question here, from a Politico article, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard testified to House Intelligence Committee members today, that encrypted messaging app Signal comes pre-installed on government devices. So there you go. That's where it's coming from. And I think that kind of makes it official. I mean, she's the person in charge. So here you go. Go ahead, Gail.
Wow.
But didn't she then also say that she wasn't in that chat?
Everyone's trying to cover their asses here. But you know, they're all pretty much complicit.
Oh, absolutely. I do want to say, though, that one thing that does make me sad about the current environment in which we live, I mean, there are a lot of things that do, but I think the fact that should Pete Hegseth find himself out of a job in the next few days, which is a diminishingly likely possibility, but should that happen, I am confident that he will A, get on Cameo, and B, be selling t-shirts that say we are currently clean on OPSEC.
If they had a sense of humor, they would do things like that, but they don't. They're incompetent. They should not be in charge. They're Fox News commentators, for God's sake. They're not even journalists, you know? And I think, you know, that's why, that must be one of the reasons why that Pete Hegseth is so hostile towards Jeffrey Goldberg. I mean, I was noticing this the other day before this story really got legs. Why were they attacking this journalist who did the right thing and alerted people, hey, you have a problem here. You just texted me all this, you know, sensitive information, if not top secret information. He could have easily just lurked back there for the next chat, but he didn't. He did the right thing. And Trump is calling him a sleazebag. And, I mean, I want to read you what Hegseth said. First of all, he claimed that nobody was texting war plans, which obviously is a direct contradiction to even what the White House said. But basically, he tried to discredit Jeffrey Goldberg by basically saying, you're talking about a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist who's made a profession of peddling hoaxes. This is a guy who peddles in garbage. Obviously, not able to really come up with more words than peddle. Super angry. This is, you know, obviously he has been caught being part of a massive mistake, and he's really upset at that point. But, you know, I was trying to figure out what is it about Jeffrey Goldberg that both Trump and Hegseth, and it seems many of the people in the Republican Party and in the MAGA world feel towards this guy. Where is all this hostility coming from? I might have found it. I looked at his Wikipedia page. It's filled with all kinds of incredible things. I mean, you know, the guy has a very stellar past. He had interviews with many Obama. He had Obama interviews, which were really well regarded. But here's something else that you might not know about. In September 2020, Goldberg published Trump: Americans Who Died in War Are Losers and Suckers. Yeah, that's where it came from. According to Goldberg's article, in canceling a 2018 visit to the Ein Mann American Cemetery and Memorial in France, which contains the remains of 2,289 U.S. service members killed in combat in World War I, Trump is alleged to have privately said, "Why should I go to that cemetery? It's filled with losers." He also repeatedly referred to the more than 1,800 U.S. Marines who lost their lives at the Battle of Belleau Wood as suckers for getting killed. Now, CNN reported that Goldberg's article immediately became a massive story, with Democrats, including Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, rushing to condemn Trump for his alleged behavior, and the White House rallying an aggressive pushback against the article, including the president himself. Trump tweeted, "The Atlantic is dying, like most magazines, so they make up a fake story in order to gain some relevance. Story already refuted." Referring to Goldberg's blockbuster revelation, the Intelligencer said the scope and intensity of the pushback was nuclear. It added, "While it's impossible to directly prove any of these allegations, there is an impressive amount of corroborating evidence. Almost all of it supports Goldberg's reporting." So there you go. You have an accredited journalist coming up against a corrupt leader caught saying something that he definitely should not have said, and reacting with fierce anger. And when that name came up again, and funny thing, that dying magazine still seems to be around, seems to be doing quite well. In fact, I hear they're going monthly again, which is great. He must be really, really upset. They must all be so upset, because, God, they look so bad. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, every accusation is still an admission. Going back to the subject of who was and wasn't on this chat, and talking about personal versus government devices, the envoy to the Middle East and Ukraine, Steve Witkoff, was in Moscow when this chat was going on. He was included in the chat. He was in the list of people on the chat. He didn't make any comments during Goldberg's look at the chat, but he later said that on his own, Steve Witkoff said on his own Twitter, "I only had with me a secure phone provided by the government for special circumstances when you travel to regions where you don't want your devices compromised," saying, "Yeah, I wasn't on it. I was in Moscow and I only had my government device," which means that his signal devices were his personal devices, device or devices, which he's saying he left at home. So, yeah, well, there you are, using your personal device with signal and admitting to that on Twitter.
I got really confused there. So he had his government device, his secure phone, running signal in Moscow. Is that what you're saying?
Evidently, he had his secure phone with him in Moscow, which is why he wasn't active on the signal chat in which he was included. This is what he is saying. And by saying that, he is saying, no, my signal stuff, I use my personal phone for that, obviously. So that's why I wasn't on there when I was in Russia.
Well, the headline I see from CBS says, "As top Trump aides sent text on signal, flight data shows a member of the group chat was in Russia." A member of the group chat. So that says he was on the chat.
Yes, he was included in the chat. His name was in the list of users included on the chat, but he wasn't active on it. He wasn't messaging anything in the string of messages that have become public knowledge.
Wait, you can be in a chat. You can be in a chat and not be active in the chat. I don't do chats very often, obviously. Okay, well, so
absolutely, you can. Just as if we, you know, if one of us went on mute, turned off our camera, we'd be on this signal call that we're using to talk to you and to our radio listeners, but we wouldn't be active in the chat.
Yeah, but you're there. You're there, though. If you turn off your computer and walk out the door, that's different. Then you're not there anymore, you see?
But if I've been included in the chat, so as a comparison, I was in a wedding and we were planning the bachelorette party. So all of the bridesmaids and maid of honor were in a chat together. Some people were included, like they were texted and their names were there, but they never responded because they were bad planners. And they had been like sent the chat. They just never acknowledged it, never responded to it. And I think that's the kind of thing we're talking about. If you send a text to 9 people and 3 of them respond, 9 people are in the chat, but 3 of them are active. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I'm still a little confused as to whether or not you know who is there and who is not there.
And you remember idling on IRC?
Yeah, of course. I'm doing it's right that. Now. I mean, but it means I can go back to it at some point and see what I missed. You know, it's being logged.
Yes.
So this person who wasn't active, is he able to go back and see it later?
Yes, he was idling in the chat, and that was because his signal was running at home on his personal devices.
That's the same thing. He was in the chat then. He was you know, he doesn't have to be active right now to get all the juicy data. So that's, you know, it boggles the mind that people can be anywhere. You can be looking over someone's shoulder. You don't know who's actually reading the text. Somebody could take a picture of the phone and save it for all posterity. I know, you know, this particular signal chat, if I read correctly, the text disappears after a week, which is a problem right there because there's no accountability, which is probably the intent of using signal. Obviously, you know, in this particular case, that did not last because of journalism. Go ahead, Alex.
I like the way Rob has been thinking about this and the various deductions that he's been making here with respect to the use of the personal devices. And going back to this weird notion of signal being installed by default on government phones, well, that does not necessarily mean that you should use.
You know, you always freeze at the most inopportune moments, Alex. You really have to get a better
connection. I don't know. Sure enough. Okay, so well, it's where I am terribly, but not going to get better until I get back to the United States. Apparently,
there are
so,
other places in England you can connect to the internet, but never mind. We'll discuss that later.
Well, not here, not now. Right now, this is the only thing I have available. But in any event, the point is that you don't necessarily have to use Signal for communications just because it's on your device. Now, there are legal reasons why you should not be using Signal for these types of communications. I mean, some of them may involve things like, well, you could be violating perhaps the Espionage Act by mishandling national defense information through Signal in this way. Also, you could be violating the Presidential Records Act and the Federal Records Act. These are laws that mandate the preservation of certain types of government records. And these communications are certainly records that would be mandated to be preserved. And the use of Signal's disappearing messages features and the potential failure to archive these types of communications could actually violate those two different laws, those various acts. So also, if you're trying to prevent records or you have an intent to evade record keeping requirements by using Signal to conceal official records from the government, a form of criminal offense.
Take that sentence again, Alex.
Oh, it's really annoying. Okay. So if you are actually trying to evade record keeping by using Signal to conceal official records from the government, that in and of itself could be a criminal act.
Interesting. Now, you know, one question I had that I asked you guys before, when you're using the Signal group chat, and again, I don't do this, so I don't really know. How would you catch something like the Jeffrey Goldberg incident? How would you know somebody's on there that shouldn't be on there? And I saw a screen grab of what a group chat looks like. And I see people chatting, you know, I see people talking, but I don't see a list of names of people who are on the chat at that moment, like over to the side, like you would see in a desktop because there's space for it. You have to actually select something that shows you a list of everybody who's there. So I could see all these people not doing that and not checking, and this guy is able to just hang out there, and who knows who else is able to just hang out there for however long and not be detected. Rob?
Yeah, that's about right. You can click over at any time during a Signal group chat and see the full list of people who are on it. You can see when people get added, when people leave the chat, but nobody can really enforce any sort of hey, everyone, just make sure you know that such and such is on this chat now. And when this chat was started, when it was put together, or at any point after that, this person, someone added the wrong person into the chat, and you know, hilarity ensued.
It certainly appears so. Now, if you're interested in who the members of the chat were, of course, in addition to Jeffrey Goldberg, we had Mike Waltz, who is the guy who, for whatever reason, brought Jeffrey into that particular conversation. We have Scott B. That refers to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, billionaire hedge fund manager. There's Brian, just Brian. That's Brian McCormick, former energy consultant, chief of staff for the National Security Council, serving under Waltz. There's Pete Hegseth. There's Dan Katz, the chief of staff for Bessent, who identifies Katz as the Treasury Department's contact in the chat. Joe Kent, Trump's nominee to run the Counterterrorism Center. SM. Anyone want to guess who SM is? Go ahead. Nobody?
Quickly. I mean, I bet it's Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller, you got it. Mike Needham, counselor and chief of staff to Marco Rubio. John Ratcliffe, the CIA director. Oh, was I not supposed to say his name? He's CIA. I don't know. Susie Wiles, the White House chief of staff. TG. Any guesses? The people who use initials, they're the ones that really are thinking security. All right? Stephen Miller is number one. TG? Come on.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard, yeah. Not bad. Vice President Vance. Stephen Witkoff, the Trump administration's special envoy. Alex Wong, Waltz's aide. Walker Barrett, likely a senior staffer on Waltz's national security team. I'm looking at thehill.com. They don't even know for sure. And then there's Jacob, and it's unclear who Jacob is. That's literally what it says. It is unclear who Jacob is. Who is Jacob? Can we find this out? We should know who Jacob is. He was on the call. My goodness. All right, and here's one final bit of fun that Wired uncovered. A Venmo account under the name Michael Waltz, carrying a profile photo of the National Security Advisor, connected to accounts bearing the names of people closely associated with him, was left open to the public until this afternoon. A Wired analysis shows that the account revealed the names of hundreds of Waltz's personal and professional associates, including journalists, military officers, lobbyists, and others. Information a foreign intelligence service or other actors could exploit for any number of ends. I'm telling you, these folks are not qualified to be anywhere near the buildings that they currently occupy. This is incredible. I do want to ask one question, though, since this was open and everybody was able to peruse the hundreds of people, was Jeffrey Goldberg in that list? That would be a nice clue.
No, but I did find one thing that I wanted to bring to kind of close the circle.
Are you saying he was not in there? You looked at the list?
At Pete Hegseth's, I'm sorry, at Michael Waltz's Venmo? No, I did not.
Okay, I don't know what the no was for then. All right.
I mean, I'm just guessing because here's the other thing I learned, and I realized I mentioned this earlier and didn't get to finish it. So this is why it's also probably really good to have contact photos, because Jameson Greer, who was confirmed last month as a trade something or another, was probably the second JG in Michael Waltz's phone. And he meant to add Jameson Greer and just saw JG and went for it. So I'm assuming that the smart money is on that. This is just the incompetence is mind-boggling.
I mean, I've never made that mistake. I don't even know how to make that kind of a mistake. I look at names of people if I'm going to be calling them, for instance, and if it's not the person I'm calling, I don't call them. You know, it's basically just simple checking. And if these people aren't checking who they're talking to, they're sure as hell not checking what they're doing with the tremendous power that they've been entrusted with. Alex? You're staring at your finger.
There we
go. Ahead.
Hey, there we go. I'm back. I keep freezing going in and out here, but I want to talk about the mistakes here, right? Because we're talking about this Signalgate scandal as if it's some kind of one-off major catastrophe here. I mean, this was frankly, this revelation was really stunning. It's amateur hour for operational security, but there's real consequences here. This is going to very seriously cause our allies to reconsider sharing sensitive and classified information with us. I mean, you have to lead from the top down. And this is not the first time that the Trump administration or its people have made massively significant intelligence or security blunders. I mean, let's think about what has happened. Have we forgotten what happened during the first administration and afterwards? Hundreds of classified documents were found at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, some of them in a shower, right? Potentially accessible to lots of unauthorized individuals. This is not a one-off, right? You remember way back in the first administration too, when Trump's attorneys were overheard discussing various investigations into the administration by a New York Times reporter who was sitting, I think, at a restaurant next to them.
Kyle, go ahead.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about some of the other aspects of this that are really interesting. I will point out that a lot of the critiques and, well, let's just say there's so many people just clowning on these people, and they're like hold my beer, OPSEC. And I will say that in contrast to other administrations, let's say the last one, the kinds of jokes and media around this are very playful and very hilarious. And I'd say much less conspiratorial, because you don't need any kind of crazy harebrained conspiracies to absolutely assail them just for how goofy this whole thing is.
Yeah.
So I do want to suggest to our listeners, enjoy the playfulness of it. That is, that ridicule is a loud speech. And I think as long as it is not like really dark and conspiratorial and just really ugly as it has been, I think it's welcome. And I'm really interested in what ways people are thinking about this. This is going to be very hard for this administration to live down. They've basically made bombing Yemen famous. Like, that was something that would just go on and no one would really talk about it. Be like, what's going on in Yemen?
That's an interesting point.
What are we even doing? This is going to be so in the forefront. I mean, now you have the rebels there or whatever adversary there coming back and responding and attacking our flotillas and stuff. It's elevated this whole conflict way above the surface. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I just wanted to add was we've laid it all out. There you have it, everybody. I mean, a lot of people have been talking about this whole thing. It's interesting what the ways that they'd speak about this politically, the leveraging they're trying to do. It's very instructive. And it speaks to, okay, jokes aside, the myriad of ways this is a revealing compromise of their in communications, their the ways they do it, just the use of signal alone, I think opens up a really big, I mean, it makes signal a target in ways it probably wasn't before. And this was, and their excuse I think now is like, oh, this is just to like say when we're gonna go like meet at the water cooler and like have a coffee break, or when we'll be at the meeting, or when the bagels are gonna arrive, or whatever. Like, that's not how they're using it, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's elevated signal and the use of these tools. It's also, as we pointed out, laid out the avoidance, this as an avoidance strategy to have any kind of record of their discussions and planning, maybe not even in the immediate, but in the future, as we said, for FOIA and other national archiving purposes, which is traditionally been something that was respected. Clearly, that's not the case with this administration. It's only been confirmed in this incident. So those are some things I'm really interested in. And just the projecting of like how far out they're planning, how they're using the media, not entertainment, but like news and the cycles of things, the way they're using messaging to shape public opinion around their actions and excuse their transgressions.
Well, I found it really interesting that it's quite possible more people have learned about the bombing of Yemen, not from the bombing of Yemen, but from this signal a scandal, Signalgate, I guess they'll call it. But the thing that really is telling is how they own it or how they refuse to own it. They will not admit that they did anything wrong. They will mock the people who ask them questions. They will mock the person who they included on the damn chat in the first place. No request of his. They just did that, and they're going to try and trash a well-respected journalist who just was receiving their errant messaging. And basically, you're seeing the MAGA followers and Trump's a little group basically saying that there's nothing to see here. This wasn't a big deal. This isn't classified. And of course, we all know differently. We all know this most definitely was a very big deal. So go ahead.
I feel for the people that have taken an oath to put their lives on the line for us and for these people at their command. It's embarrassing. And all your serious obligations as a defender of this country and our ideals, this is the crew that's going to send you into harm's way.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. And don't say we weren't warned. Any final words from Signal Land before somebody intrudes on our conversation? Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, before I start to break up here.
Yes, please.
You know, I think what really matters here in the context of discussing classified information, sensitive information like this, is that, you know, the setting really, really matters here. For anybody who's a member of the intelligence community, it's like being in an episode of Severance. As soon as you walk out the door of the CIA or...
Rob, Gila, any final words?
I mean, we're currently clean on OPSEC, and I'm thrilled to say that.
All right, let's all chip in. Maybe we can get Alex on internet connection someday.
Yeah, it must be at Heathrow or something.
I don't know. All right, we are going to continue this conversation over on YouTube, and Channel 2600 starts at 8 o'clock, and you can write to us oth@2600.com. Please keep paying attention. Keep letting us know what you hear. And we'll try to do the same. Good night.
See ya.
पहले दिन से ऐसी बंसी बजाई है कि अभी तक मेरी जीत नहीं आई।